So there, our church covenant, we just recited. Now, our faith, Unitarian Universalism, is a covenantal tradition. And you could say covenants are like process goals. The way we do things together. We agree to do things this way. And it's different from a creed. Creedal churches say, well, here's what we believe. You know, we believe in the Nicene Creed or what have you. Everybody says, yeah, I believe that Christ died and rose on the third day and so on, or whatever. But we're non-creedal. But we are covenantal. That is, we agree to behave in certain ways. Questing for truth, providing service, dwelling together in peace, seeking knowledge freely, and serving humanity. Thus do we covenant. It's kind of the New England way, we call it, in religion. It's our way, and it's not only ours. Other faith communities are non-creedal, but not too many. Now, I also want to talk about covenant today, about covenant circles, which is a ministry of this church, about consensus, that is, decision-making processes that are typical of covenantal churches. And I'm also going to touch onto Holly House and the decisions that are before us. Now, covenant circles, covenant groups, small group ministry. This church has had small groups or covenant circles for over 10 years. And since I arrived, and with Ann Curley's help, and of course, Nicole Duff, I've been doing what I can to revitalize this important ministry of our church. And as the season progresses, we're going to also try to start up a couple of new covenant circles. Now, related to covenants and covenant circles are right relations. And now we have a right relations task force. And right relations committees or task force or whatever help us remain faithful to our covenant. And the reason is because the covenant's kind of hard to disagree with in a way, but it's very general, it's very abstract. The quest for truth, we agree to dwell together in peace. Well, what does that mean? It might mean, well, no name calling, you know. And it might mean, think before you send out a mass email that indicts others in the congregation for being not up to your standards. So those are right relations covenants. So sometimes there'll be a covenant like this that everybody can basically memorize. The right relations covenant will be more exacting, with more examples of what not to do and how to behave. Now, covenant circles do this informally by writing covenants and then following them. Usually, in covenant circles, covenants are pretty simple. Participants agree or commit to coming together once a week or every other week or whatever the agreement is. But people agree to attend unless they're out of town or sick. And there are other aspects to this. There's a form to it. You know, we light a chalice. We have a reading on a particular subject. And the subjects are all fairly deep, meaningful themes about life and ethics and society. And covenant circles are typically made up of 5 to 12 people and designed to generate intimacy and what James Luther Adams called ultimacy, which is, you know, Paul Tillich defined God as one's ultimate concern. So whatever your ultimate concern is, when you begin to talk about your ultimate values, your ultimate concerns, your ultimate hopes and dreams, you're getting theistic, according to Tillich. And you're trying to grapple with, discover, own your own theology. And so covenant circles help in that process by focusing, by having a certain form and getting people to say out loud and then indeed commit to coming for when they can for a year and then reenlisting and keeping at it. And when they work, they really do generate intimacy and ultimacy. People grow in trust and understanding and respect for one another, and they become more sensitive. We become more sensitive. And covenant circles, in that way, are like laboratories for right relations and establishing and internalizing right relations. Now, larger congregations often find it helpful to establish things like a right relations committee. So you have these covenant circles where everybody kind of knows the covenant and you kind of trust each other, and it's fairly informal. You write it out, but you don't, we don't, I don't know, some of them maybe say it every week, but most don't. When you have a congregation of 400 plus people, those kind of informalities don't really hold it together. So a right relations committee gets formed, and they kind of go over things and help remind one another. And when there's a kerfuffle of some kind, they kind of spring to action. And it's not like they go, tisk, tisk. They go, keep in mind our right relations. Here we have this process, da-da-da, and people think about it usually, and they kind of go, yeah, I was a little bit hot-headed. I take it back. So now, Ann Curley and Nicole Duff and I are busy, as I mentioned, revitalizing covenant circles and inviting more church members to get involved. And it helps then this church covenant to, you know, serve humanity and fellowship, seek knowledge and freedom. It helps it to concretize what that really means in day-to-day behavior. Now, UU churches, as I said, are covenantal communities, not creedal, not centered around what we collectively believe, but centered around the ways we agree to behave with one another. We'll treat everybody with dignity and assume their inherent worth. We'll operate with democratic forms. We like a free and responsible search for truth. All that's part of what we do. Now, most church decisions in congregationally ordered or churches like ours are made not by votes. I mean, votes are taken, but they're really more consensus-oriented whenever possible. People agree to keep working at issues until they find a resolution that almost everyone can lend their hearts to. So if you go to board meeting, which all our board meetings are open meetings, you'll see that issues are kind of talked to death almost, until a general consensus emerges. You know, there are not many 5-4 votes, and to have a bunch of those in a row is not good. So what churches automatically do is try to find consensus. Like in the quote at the top of the service, consensus is not ordinarily secured through voting. It works most easily when it occurs almost automatically as the group moves ahead. And mostly I think that's the way the board here works, and most of our churches work. Now, the other piece about consensus is that people agree that when they see they're in a small minority, you kind of throw in the towel. You go, okay, I'll go with the will of the group. You know, because if you're operating on consensus, one person can't theoretically say no and block consensus. But that's the other half of consensus. You agree if that's what it's kind of shaping up to be, forbear. Now, the most important thing about consensus is to try to reach it and then follow through with its implementation. And it's harder, as I noted, when churches get bigger because of the breadth of opinion among the membership. But the situation is hardly intractable. Even when you get one of these, leaning towards 5-4, there are tools to help us find consensus and act upon it. The town hall following this service, and there was one earlier, is an effort to help everyone understand the options up for a vote in 2 weeks on Holly House disposition, and to make so that you can make informed choices accordingly. Now, the Cossey Hills congregation and people, the partnership we are celebrating today. These partner churches really help us transcend our parochialism. I think it's not coincidental that 25 and 30 years ago, when the partnership churches ideas kind of became popular, was about the heyday of Unitarian triumphalism, where you go to a Unitarian church and you'd hear things like, oh, well, we're not like those naive, unawake, Methodists here. We're better than that. And, there was really not much tolerance. Or really what it was just parochialism. And it helps us get past that to realize that even among UUs, there's from highly liturgical congregations in Transylvania and here in Cossey Hills and in the Philippines, congregations that grew up out of Eastern ideas and are much more fluid and open and consensus-driven. I remember Rebecca Parker, the recently retired president of Star King, wrote an essay about she'd had a near-death experience at about 38 years old, 40 years old, and it changed her whole outlook. She grew up in Washington State, and then she realized she knew nothing about the Japanese-American community that was right down the street from where she'd grown up. She knew nothing about the Native American people in her neighborhood, or the African American, or the Chinese, or any of that. And she made a deliberate attempt to get to know these people and to integrate their stories into her own imagination and memory so that she could become a more universalistic consciousness of who she was. Well, the Cossey Hills Unitarians give us that in this congregation. They've come to their Unitarianism by means of a completely non-Western beginning point, but they see reality largely as we do. Maybe not in the same mythic framework, but philosophically, yes. In their villages and schools, decision-making is aimed at having everyone on board. As our Mission Fund Drive theme puts it, all in. Meanwhile, the Holly House Development Task Force is this weekend presenting, it was mailed out yesterday, and you'll get it soon, is presenting us with a choice, which we'll vote on March 24th, 2 weeks from today, regarding the disposition of our Holly House property. Last year, an earlier congregational meeting resolved to sell Holly House. That's already been decided. But the question remains, what kind of sale do we want to make? And there are four options that will be on the ballot and that you can study this right after church, right here. Well, first you have to go have a piece of Millie's cake. But then you come. There are four options. And they're all good. They will all help the church financially, and they all give us the opportunity to also demonstrate our commitment to social justice and social action initiatives that will help us grow our souls and be helpful politically and spiritually in this community. But the greatest good, from my point of view and from a consensus point of view, is that we agree to remain in community whatever option carries the day. We all agree at the get-go not to block consensus, but to wholeheartedly go along with the choice that most members indeed vote for. So meanwhile, for sure, do check out the town hall meetings like the one after service, where you'll learn about the option and what commends each one of them to your attention. Now, consensus kind of presupposes democracy, our fifth UU principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. It allows everyone to be heard, and democracy also honors minority views, but it honors, too, our collective capacity to indeed make timely choices and move forward together as a whole community. It's been broadening and insight generating for me these last couple of months to become acquainted with the Causey Hills Unitarians and the strength of our partner church relationship. Their religion of India held to a strong oral tradition until about 175 years ago. So, kind of just in the mid-19th century. Their culture and morals, as in all oral traditions, are handed down orally. And people learn these little rhymes and precepts about what constitutes proper behavior in home and in society. In the last years of the 19th century, Radhan Singh Berry, who Mike read that little prayer of his, this reflective, progressive, regional leader and sage, I guess you'd call him, wrote many of these aphorisms down, and he turned some of them into songs and contributed some of his own. Later, when foreign missionaries came to the Causey Hills area, Radhan Singh Berry found affinity with our Unitarian theology, which I don't think any of the missionaries were Unitarians, but they told him about Unitarianism. He said, "We'll be that." And his aphorisms are mostly recipes for moral and social harmony and for finding consensus. Consider, the best etiquette is followed, if followed fully, binds you to your clan and parents' families. The best behavior will always bring many benefits and many a blessing. Don't take this lightly and dismiss these words, my children. Instruction, never avoid. Spread and remember my teachings forever so you may live civilly with one another. If anyone makes a mistake or slights, never keep resentment and malice inside. Once they've apologized and expressed regret, reconcile and learn to forgive and forget. About others' private lives, do not inquire. It's a most self-damaging trait to ever acquire. Never laugh at others and jeer and taunt, for you'll surely invite the wrath of God. Ill-treating the poor, no one will condone. It's a sin you'll have one day to atone. Well, there are hundreds of these. And as it turns out, maintaining right relations is really central to Causey life and central to these aphorisms. Causey Unitarian literature is all about maintaining right relations. It's almost a blueprint for building beloved community. Causey Hills is indeed a worthy partner congregation for this congregation. And their commitment to finding consensus can be a good model for all of us in this research and decision-making period of the next couple of weeks before we vote on March 24th. There's a lot in the Causey literature about not imposing one's opinions on others, but pitching in, and about keeping at it, and about keeping in dialogue until you find common ground. about living in India in right relationship. The restorative circles that Pam Orbach has recently begun here in our congregation and her nonviolent communication class are both strategies or practices that have helped congregations like ours dispense with outmoded ways of doing things and unpacking emotional baggage that the group as a whole may carry. And you say, but what emotional baggage? Well, consider the emotional baggage that comes along when a congregation loses two well-loved ministers, and indeed now three, over a matter of 2 or 3 years. There's a lot of feeling there to unpack, and a lot of analysis, and a lot of art and music, too. All of these attributes are included when a group tries to practice right relationships. The Board of Trustees and the Holly House Task Force have both decided not to endorse any specific choice. And I'm not going to endorse a choice, too, but I'm going to tell you how I would vote. First of all, like I said, all the choices are good. There's two groups that have a plan for affordable housing, to build affordable housing complex that will serve up to 25 families. And in both of those, we would sell the property for enough money to cover our immediate expenses. The board, many people have expressed interest in paying off the mortgage. But there'd be some money left over and nothing to sneeze at. If we sold at a market rate, there are two proposals for that, too, and the proceeds are much higher. I think the revised bid is $4 million. Our mortgage is about $750,000 today. If that were to be paid off, that leaves a lot of money left over. And the one ballot proposal is that, well, and the leadership does what they choose to do with that money. I mean, it's market sale, and we are the leadership. It's a congregational polity. All of us are part of it. Any major financial decision requires a vote of the whole church. You can talk about policy governance all you want. Certain things are the only decidable by everybody. And the disposition of any amount of property of bigger than, you know, a couple of bucks is such a decision. Now, last spring, before I arrived, the church felt threatened by a binary choice, either market rate or in support of community housing. Consensus at the time was felt to be impossible. And when Carol and I accepted the call to come here, I thought initially, as I am still thinking, that the one choice that's a market rate but then takes significant funds, up to about a third of the net, and agrees to you to create a benevolent fund that's directed toward only social justice, or that could include affordable housing and significant gifts, and it can also be something that we can all gather around. This is kind of why I'm inclined to support it, because then it gives us a plan for the next, for my developmental ministry, around which we can gather and be in agreement about how to be more faithful to our mission about social justice, about promoting justice. And with some money to help us do it, I mean, the other market rate plan, well, we can build a swimming pool, we can put in tennis courts. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. But if you say, no, we want to focus a good chunk of it, yeah, we would like to make the buildings a little nicer, we could use another staff person, but what we really want to do is make our social justice laudatory across the country and across the denomination. Well, I would love that. I think that Plan C that sells the property at a market rate but uses the proceeds to enlist us all in becoming the hands and heart of our mission here in Bellevue. Makes sense to me. Not that the others aren't good too. So do your homework and let's get ready to find consensus and go forward. Amen. Namaste. Shalom. Salam. And blessed be.